Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Hello and welcome back. Today we're going to talk about one of the great mysteries of modern physical science, and that is dark energy. As we often do, we have some great images posted on the website that you'll want to look at while you're listening to the audio track. So open a second window and go to the website, guidetothecosmos.com. Click on the microphone icon and pull up today's show, Dark Energy. Dark energy is something that science didn't even know about until just about a dozen years ago, but it's what most of the universe seems to be made of, and it's pushing the universe apart at a faster and faster rate. So it is accelerating the expansion of the universe, and in a sense, tearing it apart. So let's see what we know about dark energy and what we don't know. There are two principal pieces of evidence that support the existence of dark energy. One is the measurement of the expansion rate of the universe using type 1a supernova that we discussed when we talked about Edwin Hubble. And the second is the observation of the cosmic microwave background radiation. Complicated stuff, but let's find out what they mean. Let's look at image number one on the website. This is the data that we talked about when we did the show on Edwin Hubble and the expansion of the universe. In this slide, we're displaying the expansion rate at various times in the age of the universe, in the history of the universe. When the dots are above the horizontal line, that's a fast expansion rate, and when the dots are below the horizontal line, that's a slower expansion rate. The dots on the right side of the chart depict the detection of supernova that are extremely far away from us, and so therefore we are looking at events that occurred in the very, very remote past, because it's taken light an enormous amount of time to reach us from those very distant supernova events. And the points on the left side of the chart are closer and closer to the current period, to today. In fact, today is all the way to the left side of the chart. So we're looking at supernova that occurred at different distances, and therefore, as we see them, they are at different times in the past, different look-back times in the history of the universe. And as the chart is labeled, you see we start from today and go back in time, looking back in time, for up to about 10.5 billion years. During that time, it seems that the expansion rate of the universe was initially slowing down slightly. The data aren't as precise because these supernovae are so far away, but there is this indication of a trend that as you move from the very distant past to periods of time that were only, let's say, 6 billion years ago, that the expansion rate has decreased steadily. Then we reach a minimum at 6 billion years ago when the expansion rate seemed to be the lowest value that it's ever had in our universe. Since then, the expansion rate is definitely increased. These data are very precise, and we can say with a very high level of confidence that in the last 6 billion years, the expansion rate has increased. And that was a great shock when it was first announced in 1997 by two different groups. It was a great shock because it doesn't make any sense in the traditional theories of gravity. Both in Newton's theory and in Einstein's theory, normal matter has attractive gravity. No matter how far apart two massive objects are, they're always pulling on each other with a certain amount of force. So as the galaxies try to move away from each other with the expansion of the universe, there is still the force of gravity pulling them back together. So their velocity should decrease somewhat. The force of gravity should change their velocities and make the expansion less. This makes sense. This is what we saw in the early ages of the universe on the right side of the chart. And what doesn't make sense from this classical point of view is what we see on the left side of the chart, where the expansion rate is increasing. So this indicates that there is some sort of repulsive effect, a negative gravity, if you will, that is pushing the material of the universe apart. Not knowing what this is, we nonetheless gave it a name, and it's called dark energy. The second major piece of evidence for dark energy comes from the cosmic microwave background radiation, the CMB, which is shown on image number 2 on the website. This is sort of a funny-looking picture. It looks like someone took a bunch of paint and sprayed it at a canvas without much regard to what they were doing. So what is this strange-looking picture really all about? Well, this is a picture of the very, very early universe. In fact, this is the earliest picture that anyone will ever be able to take of our universe using electromagnetic radiation, any form of light. And that is because this is the first light that escaped from the primordial fireball that our universe began as. This image shows our universe when it was 36,000 times younger than it is today. So to make a comparison, if you had a 100-year-old man, this would be an image of that person 24 hours after the moment of conception. So truly, this is a baby picture of our universe. And it looks like a whole bunch of little dots. Now it turns out that what you're seeing here are the differences in energy density throughout the universe. The red areas were about 1/100,000th more dense than the blue areas. There was a little bit more matter in the red areas than there was in the blue areas. And these red areas, over time, became denser and denser, because in the red areas there was slightly more material, so there was slightly stronger gravity, and that pulled in material from the surrounding portions. And in the blue areas, there was slightly less material, so there was less gravity there to keep the material together, and material was progressively lost more and more from the blue areas. So the red areas became ever more dense, and the blue areas became ever less dense. The red areas have now evolved into becoming galaxy clusters, and the blue areas are now great voids in our universe. The light that was captured in this image came from the universe when it was only about 1/1,000,000 years old. And we can see that at that time, that everywhere in the universe, there was just about the same density of mass and energy. In fact, no place differed from another by more than about 1 part in 100,000. Now, even though this image looks really chaotic, scientists working with NASA have been able to glean a tremendous amount of information about the early universe. They've done what's called a power spectrum analysis. Now, for you math geeks, that's a spherical two-dimensional Fourier analysis. But for those whom I like to refer to as real people, what this means is they've analyzed in a quantitative way just how splotchy that image is. So if one did a power spectrum analysis of, let's say, an oil painting, then one would be able to determine what size brushes the artist used and how often he used each brush of each size. From this analysis, they've been able to determine six important critical numbers that characterize our universe. One is its age, which we find is 13.7 billion years. The second is the overall geometry of our universe, which we find is Euclidean. A third is the amount of normal matter in the universe, which turns out to be only about 4.5% of the total energy. Everything that we see around us, galaxies, planets, and ourselves, everything that's made of atoms, from hydrogen to uranium, everything that's made of protons, neutrons, and electrons, everything we really know, that's 4.5% of everything that's really out there. Another 22%, this data tells us, is dark matter, which we discussed in another radio show. And finally, about 73% of all the energy in the universe, this image tells us, is in this mysterious form called dark energy. And all these parameters are determined by the CMB data to a precision of about 1%. And these data come from a NASA satellite called the WMAP, WMAP, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Project. Okay, so we have evidence from two sources, from the Type 1A supernova that showed that the universe is expanding at an ever-increasing rate, which began in earnest about 6 billion years ago, and we have the cosmic microwave background radiation that tells us that 73% of all of the energy in the universe is in this mysterious form called dark energy. So what indeed do we think is the dark energy that is providing this repulsive gravity that is controlling the universe and pushing it at an ever faster expansion rate and tearing it apart? Well, we don't know for sure. There is no theory of science that explains in detail how this can work. But we do have some ideas. So understanding that this is not proven science, let's move forward and analyze what is the best explanation that we think probably is the answer to this question. And that answer is that dark energy comes from nothing at all. Dark energy is the characteristic of empty space. Empty space, we find out, is not really simply nothing. As Shakespeare said, there really is much ado about nothing. So what does all that craziness mean? Well, in quantum mechanics, we discover that there is a certain grayness in nature. Not everything is absolutely black or white. And some of the fuzzy things in nature are energy and time and momentum and position. And by that I mean that it's impossible to determine with complete precision exactly when something occurred and exactly how much energy it had and exactly where it was and exactly how it was moving. That there is a certain fuzziness to all that, which is ultimately due to the fact that all the particles from which all the matter is made are really also waves in addition to being particles. And so they have a wavelength. They are spread over a certain amount of space. That makes them a little bit fuzzy. And this notion is precisely stated in Heisenberg's uncertainty principles. And one of the conclusions is that energy is not exactly conserved at infinitesimal time intervals. To measure energy precisely, you can only do it over a somewhat extended period of time. You can't do it instantaneously. This is not because we don't have good enough instruments. This is because nature itself is not well enough defined at these very, very short timescales and very minute energy differences. So it's possible, for example, for a certain amount of energy to pop up from nothing at all, exist for an infinitesimal period of time, and then disappear. It's possible for instance, an electron and an anti-electron to appear from absolute vacuum, from nothing that was there before, and for them to exist for about 10 to the minus 22 seconds, less than a billionth of a second, before they need to disappear. They do need to disappear because ultimately energy is conserved. But as long as the amount of energy that's being borrowed, if you will, from the Bank of Heisenberg is repaid quickly enough, then nature will not allow anyone to detect that that event occurred. So this means that throughout the entire universe, at every point in space, and at every moment in time, virtual particles, as they are called, are continually popping into existence and then disappearing again, everywhere and always. So the empty space, the vacuum of space, and in fact a space that has other things in it as well, is really a froth of bubbles, if you will, something like ocean waves crashing on the coast. The bubbles are created, they disappear, and the energy comes into and exits existence. Now, this all sounds a bit like a fairy tale, but in fact, it has very definite physical consequences that have been very precisely measured and confirmed. So, for example, it has been calculated that the effect of these virtual particles changes the gyromagnetic ratio of the electron in a very specific way. And extremely precise measurements to 12 decimal digits have confirmed that the prediction of quantum mechanics of the effect of these virtual particles is absolutely correct. It is one of the most precisely measured quantities in all of science, and it confirms the existence of these virtual particles conforming to the theory of quantum mechanics to about one part in a billion. It's a very well confirmed idea. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos. I am your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, and we are talking about the mysterious force of nature, dark energy. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back talking about dark energy on Guide to the Cosmos. Before the break, we discussed that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle of quantum mechanics allows and even requires that virtual particles spontaneously pop up from nothing and disappear after an infinitesimal amount of time. So what does all this mean to have these virtual particles popping up everywhere and all the time? Well, It means that even empty space has a certain amount of energy to it. These particles don't exist very long, but some of them are always there. And so, if you have a cubic foot of empty space, there'll be a certain number of these particles at any moment in time, and all of those particles have energy. So even empty space, even total vacuum, isn't really empty. It has a certain modest amount of energy in it. And that peculiarity leads to the conclusion that it must also have a negative pressure. And I demonstrate that fact on the third image on our website, where you see two boxes. These are two different regions of empty space. You can imagine the one on the left is where we start, and we expand that empty space to something a bit larger, and we end up with the box in the lower middle of the slide. So both boxes represent the empty space. They both have to have the same energy density because their energy density comes from the same phenomenon, and that is the virtual particles. If you have a larger box, there are going to be more virtual particles in them. The energy density will be the same. And since both of them are filled with dark energy, whatever pressure dark energy has, which is what we want to calculate here, must be the same in both boxes because both boxes contain the same stuff. The only thing that can have changed is the volume. Now, if we take the smaller volume and we expand it into the larger volume, then we still need to conserve the overall energy. Energy in total is conserved. It's not conserved over microscopic times, that's what we're talking about, but it is conserved over longer periods of times, macroscopic times, anything bigger than a billionth of a second. And so as we expand this small region of space to the larger region of space, we have to realize that energy still must be conserved. And there is a very simple law for the conservation of energy in the case of an ideal gas. And that law is shown on the chart, and it says that the pressure times the change in volume is equal to minus the energy times the change in volume. So that means that we can cancel out the change in volume, that the pressure is equal to minus the energy density. Okay, so we said that the empty space has energy density, positive energy density, because all particles have positive mass. And that means that this pressure of empty space must be negative. Sort of strange, negative pressure, but that's what the math says. And now we come to the second great pillar of 20th century physics, relativity theory. So we started with quantum mechanics, we got these virtual particles, and now we're going to fold in relativity. And general relativity, Einstein's theory of gravity, says that if you have an ideal gas, its effective gravity will be determined by its energy density plus 3 times the pressure. The factor of 3 comes from the fact that there are 3 dimensions of space. Well, so energy plus 3 times the pressure. But pressure, in the case of dark energy, in the case of these virtual particles, is equal to minus the energy density. So you have 1E minus 3Es. You end up with the effective gravity of this construction of virtual particles is minus 2E. So if the energy density is positive, then the effective gravity of these virtual particles is negative. Negative meaning, instead of pulling things together like normal gravity, which is positive, dark energy pushes things apart because it has repulsive gravity. Okay, well, all of this seems pretty far out, but actually there is an effect that can be measured on simple laboratory equipment called the Casimir effect, which is related directly to these virtual particles and their effective gravitational force. The Casimir effect discovered in 1948 by two Dutch physicists, Casimir and Polder, is that if you have two metal plates, and you imagine that there are sheets, if you will, and you put them very close together so that there is a very small gap between the metal plates, then they discovered that there was a force, mysterious force, that was pulling those plates together. Not gravity, something else. Well, that ties in and makes a lot of sense if you think about it in terms of the virtual particles. Within the metal plates, the electromagnetic fields that are required for virtual photons can't exist because the metal plates are conductors. So there are certain combinations of virtual particles that would exist in normal empty space, which can't exist in the gap between the metal plates. So, in other words, there is less of the dark energy between the metal plates because the metal shorts out some of these virtual particles. There's the same usual amount of dark energy, which is larger, on the opposite side of the gap outside the two metal plates. And so since there is more repulsive gravity on the outside than there is in the gap, there is this apparent force pushing the plates together. This is the Casimir effect. It can be measured in our laboratories, and it is indeed a very real phenomenon. So altogether, we have three pieces of physical evidence that highlight the existence of dark energy coming from these virtual particles. The only fly in the ointment, if you will, is that we don't have a theory that can truly compute how much energy there should be in the vacuum. How much is the energy density of empty space? When we use our modern theories, our quantum mechanical theories, to try to calculate those numbers, we end up with numbers that are simply absurd. And the reason for that is that we lack a comprehensive theory called quantum gravity, which would unite the quantum mechanical theory of the micro world and the relativistic theory of the macro world. Until we are able to resolve that theoretical conundrum, we have experimental evidence, but no way of verifying logically that our ideas correspond to those facts. So without that theoretical backbone, we have our speculations, we have our data, but we can't tie it all together with a beautiful yellow ribbon. In the meantime, dark energy is pushing the universe apart. Every place in the universe where space is expanding creates a situation in which there is more and more dark energy. Since there's the same amount of dark energy in every cubic foot of space, the more space you have, the more dark energy there's going to be, and the more forcefully it's going to push the universe apart. So any objects in the universe which are separating with the expansion of the universe, with the global Hubble flow, as we call it, are going to become progressively pushed faster and faster apart. So all those objects are going to be departing away from us at increasing velocities, and eventually they will disappear, moving faster than the speed of light, because space can expand at any speed at all, and they will exit, if you will, from our observable universe. However, those portions of space which are not increasing in size will not have more dark energy within them in the future, and so they will not be pushed apart at an ever-increasing rate. Now, the solar system, for example, is held together by a stronger force than the amount of dark energy that's pushing it apart. That stronger force is the gravity from the sun. The Earth, similarly, is held together by its own gravity that comes from the mass of the Earth. And that gravity is a stronger force than the dark energy trying to push it apart. So the Earth is not increasing in size. The solar system is not increasing in size. They will not have more dark energy in them in the future. And so they are not being torn to shreds. Where the balance seems to come out is at the level of galaxy clusters. A cluster of galaxies like our local group, which has about 40 galaxies, the Milky Way and Andromeda being the largest two, galaxy clusters will probably stay together. Most galaxy clusters are bound strongly enough that they will be able to resist the expansion of space. They will not get bigger, they will not contain more dark energy, and they will not expand at an ever-increasing rate. They will maintain their existing size. But galaxy clusters will move apart from other galaxy clusters because the clusters are not bound to one another as tightly. There is enough dark energy in the enormous amount of space between galaxy clusters to push the clusters apart. The clusters have enough gravity within them to keep their pieces together, but not enough gravity between them to keep them from spreading apart. And so we have a situation in which, in the future, the skies will contain fewer and fewer galaxy clusters, and eventually all that astronomers on Earth would be able to observe would be the galaxies within our own local group. Of course, that's many, many billions of years off into the future. And well before then, one certainly hopes that science has come to a better understanding of this great mystery, dark energy. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.